Tonight, an American set free in North Korea, sentenced to 15 years of hard labor, now suddenly on his way home. And a mystery tonight, his parents say he's in a coma. What happened to this student from Ohio? Grilled before Congress, fiery exchanges as the attorney general comes out swinging in his defense, and senators accuse Jeff Sessions of impeding the Russia investigation by refusing to answer questions. Prison break manhunt, the search for a pair of escaped inmates who killed their guards, armed and dangerous and on the run. Seeing on the road, a consumer alert tonight about the headlights on some of the most popular SUVs on the road. How many don't get a passing grade? And Inspiring America, a little girl on a mission to honor the men and women in blue. Nightly news begins right now.
From NBC News World Headquarters in New York, this is NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt.
Good evening to our viewers in the West. We're glad you're with us tonight. Today's surprise news that a 22-year-old American student imprisoned in North Korea since early last year had suddenly been released was quickly tempered by shocking word about his health. Otto Warmbier is returning to Cincinnati tonight, but it appears that he is gravely ill and has been in a coma since sometime after his conviction and sentencing to hard labor for allegedly stealing a poster. The announcement comes as former NBA star Dennis Rodman, one of the few people to have met both North Korean leader Kim Jong-un and President Donald Trump, was paying a return visit to Pyongyang. We get more on this tonight from NBC's Gabe Gutierrez.
How I have made the worst mistake of my life.
Tonight, 15 months after his so-called trial in North Korea, 22-year-old Otto Warmbier is on his way home in a coma.
At the president's direction, the Department of State has secured the release of Otto Warmbier from North Korea.
In a statement to the Associated Press, his family says he's been in that coma for more than a year. We want the world to know how we and our son have been brutalized and terrorized by the pariah regime. A U.S. official tells NBC News the North Koreans claim Warmbier contracted botulism and fell into that coma after taking a sleeping pill. But that explanation has not been verified. A student at the University of Virginia, Warmbier had been on a tour of the reclusive country when in January of 2016 he was detained for stealing a propaganda poster from his hotel. That March, he was sentenced to 15 years of hard labor.
I entirely beg you, people and government of the DPR Korea, for forgiveness so that I may return home to my family.
Since then, the U.S. had urged the North Koreans to allow Swedish diplomats access to Warmbier and three other Americans still being held there. This February, Secretary of State Rex Tillerson briefed President Trump, who directed Tillerson to secure Warmbier's release. In May, Swedish authorities were finally allowed to visit Warmbier, but it wasn't until this month that U.S. officials say they learned of his medical condition.
The North Koreans have a lot of explaining to do. Why didn't they tell us? Why didn't they abide by the Geneva Conventions on prisoners?
Today in his hometown outside Cincinnati, prayers for his recovery.
You never thought this would happen to someone you know.
The announcement comes as former NBA star Dennis Rodman returned to North Korea after his last visit in 2014. This time, Rodman denied he was enlisted to help free any Americans.
That's not your purpose.
Not my purpose right now. My
the
purpose.
State Department says his trip had nothing to do with Warmbier's release.
Right now, Warmbier is traveling to the U.S. from Japan with a medical team and a State Department representative. He's expected to land here in Ohio and be reunited with his family later tonight. Lester?
All right, Gabe Gutierrez, thank you. We turn now to the high drama on Capitol Hill late today as the Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, went before the Senate Intelligence Committee under oath and came out forcefully in his own defense. Combative exchanges, including senators who accused Sessions of hurting the Russia investigation by refusing to answer questions about his conversations with President Trump. NBC's Casey Hunt brings us inside the room.
Sitting in the same seat where fired FBI Director James Comey appeared just 5 days ago, today Attorney General Jeff Sessions defiant, addressing the Russian election meddling Comey had been investigating.
A suggestion that I participated in any collusion, that I was aware of any collusion with the Russian government to hurt this country, is an appalling and detestable lie.
But the sharpest moments, Democrats going after Sessions for not answering questions about his conversations with the president.
And now you're not answering questions. You're impeding this investigation.
Sessions relying on what he says was longstanding Justice Department practice about not revealing confidential information.
I am not stonewalling. I am following the historic policies of the Department of Justice.
Today, Sessions contradicting Comey's account of the plea the former FBI director said he made to Sessions. Don't leave me alone with President Trump. After Comey says the president directed him to drop the Michael Flynn investigation, Sessions denying he stayed silent, as Comey claimed.
I believe it was the next day that he said something, expressed concern about being left alone with the president. But that in itself is not problematic. He did not tell me at that time any details about anything that was said that was improper.
And Sessions taking issue with this Comey assertion.
We also were aware of facts that I can't discuss in an open setting that would make his continued engagement in a Russia-related investigation problematic.
Mr. Comey said that there were matters with respect to the recusal that were problematic and he couldn't talk about them. What are they?
Why don't you tell me? There are none, Senator Wyden. There are none. I can tell you that for absolute certainty. This is a secret innuendo being leaked out there about me, and I don't appreciate it.
Sessions was also grilled today about a potential meeting with the Russian ambassador at the Mayflower Hotel back in 2016. He said that while it may have happened, he insisted that he didn't remember it. Lester.
Casey Hunt tonight. Thank you. And while all of that was playing out today, the future of Robert Mueller, the special counsel in the Russia investigation, has been called into question. Will he stay or not? This comes after a friend of the president said he thinks Mr. Trump is considering removing Mueller. We get the latest from NBC News White House correspondent Kristen Welker.
President Trump under fire amid explosive allegations. He's considering firing Robert Mueller, the special counsel heading the Russia probe. Mr. Trump ignoring shouted questions today.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
The suggestion raised by the president's longtime friend, Newsmax CEO Chris Ruddy. The White House saying Ruddy never spoke directly to the president about Mueller. Ruddy acknowledging that, but doubling down.
If you read The Art of the Deal, he always says keep all your options open. But do Chris, I think that he will actually fire him? No. But do I think it was an option or has been an option? Yes.
Is it because of something that you heard from top officials at the White House?
I've already said that I'm not going to reveal who my sources are, but that I felt confident in saying it.
Now, a chorus of Republicans saying getting rid of Mueller could be politically devastating after James Comey's controversial firing.
I think the best vindication for the president is to let this investigation go on independently and thoroughly.
But legally, the president can't directly fire Mueller. Mr. Trump could order his Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein to do it. Today, Rosenstein saying he saw no good cause to even consider that option.
If President Trump ordered you to fire the special counsel, what would you do?
Well, Senator, I'm not going to follow any orders unless I believe those are lawful and appropriate orders.
For the president, the debate may be more about pivoting from the broader Russia probe.
This is textbook Trump. This is waiting to see what he wants to do, leaving all options on the table, leaving people guessing, and creating a huge distraction.
For his part, the president also trying to focus attention on his agenda. Today, talking health care in Wisconsin and meeting with Senate Republicans at the White House. This comes as Senate Republicans have come under fire for trying to hammer out a health care bill behind closed doors and without a public hearing so far.
I really appreciate what you're doing to come out with a bill that's going to be a phenomenal bill for the people of our country.
And with the clock ticking on a potential vote, tonight two Senate sources tell NBC News President Trump told Republican senators the House health care bill, which he praised in the Rose Garden and which cuts some services, is mean and wants the Senate version to be more generous. The White House wouldn't comment but isn't denying the report. Lester.
Kristen Welker from the White House tonight. And one more important note from Washington tonight. After numerous scandals in recent years at the Department of Veterans Affairs, the House passed a bill today that would hold VA employees more accountable, make it easier to fire them, and protect whistleblowers. The vote was 368-55. The bill was passed by the Senate last week. It now heads to the president for final approval. The head of Uber said today he is stepping aside, taking a leave of absence from the ride-hailing service he co-founded as the global company confronts a series of scandals. The CEO, Travis Kalanick, said the ultimate responsibility is his, and he set no date for his return. The move came as Uber's board accepted a set of recommendations for change after widespread allegations of sexual harassment and a hostile workplace. Those recommendations include taking steps to control the use of alcohol and non-prescription drugs during work hours and at work-related events. We are on verdict watch tonight of the Bill Cosby case. Day two of deliberations, the jury has come back with several questions for the judge, raising a lot of speculation about what's going on behind closed doors. NBC's Stephanie Gosk is at the courthouse in Norristown, Pennsylvania. Stephanie, what's the latest there?
Hey, good evening, Lester. You know, it's been a hot day here in Pennsylvania. The media, the public, even some protesters waiting on the courthouse steps for a verdict that never came. Bill Cosby and his defense team have been here all day. They've been filing in and out of the courtroom every time the jury has a question. The alleged victim, Andrea Constand, has been in there as well. The jury now has been deliberating for more than a day. They've come up with four questions. The most recent question about Constand's first statement to police in Canada back in 2005. This was something the defense made a big deal about over the course of the trial. She told detectives she had never been alone with Cosby until the night of the incident. But then in three subsequent statements to law enforcement, that story changed substantially. But I would hesitate to read too much into these questions. We have no idea what the jury is thinking. Lester.
Stephanie Goss covering the Cosby trial for us. Thank you. In the state of Georgia tonight, authorities have launched a massive manhunt for a pair of escaped inmates they say killed two guards before breaking free with their guns. And there are signs tonight the dragnet could be growing. NBC's Kerry Sanders now with details.
Tonight, a hunt for two inmates armed and authorities say deadly dangerous.
Subjects escaped from prison transport bus after killing correction officers and taking their handguns.
At 6:45 this morning, a routine transfer of 33 inmates in rural Georgia turned violent. Two prisoners overpowered the two guards on the transport bus like this one, somehow breaking through a cage door and turning the guards' own pistols against them.
I saw two brutally murdered corrections officers. That's what I saw. I have their blood on my shoes.
On the run tonight, 43-year-old Donnie Russell Rowe, who was serving a life sentence for armed robbery, and 24-year-old Ricky Dubose, serving 20 years, believed to be a member of the Aryan prison gang known as the Ghost-Faced Gangsters. When the suspects escaped, Rowe and Dubose carjacked the first car they saw, this Honda Civic. It all unfolded in front of Susan Dunn's driveway. She grabbed her phone and took pictures.
It was either four or five shots, quick succession, just bam, 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 bam.
My biggest worry is they're going to kill somebody else. That's my biggest worry.
Murdered veteran corrections officers, 42-year-old Christopher Monica and 58-year-old Curtis Ballou, both men known for the love of their families.
We've lost two of our fellow officers, two of our kin.
Tonight, reports that the men broke into this home about 30 miles from where they escaped, changing out of their prison jumpsuits.
The authorities have reviewed a video that was recorded on the prison bus that shows the two inmates escaping, they say, and shooting. Tonight, there are reports that the men were spotted at a Dollar General store about a mile from where they broke in and changed clothes. The fear tonight that these men will not give up without gunfire. Lester?
All right. Kerry Sanders, thank you. At a somber, dignified transfer ceremony last night at Dover Air Force Base in Delaware, as the bodies of three American soldiers killed on Saturday in Afghanistan arrived back in this country. All were members of the Army's 101st Airborne Division. All were in their 20s. Corporal Dylan Baldrige, Sergeant Eric Hauck, and Sergeant William Bays were killed in an apparent insider attack when an Afghan soldier fired on them. It happened in an area where U.S. and Afghan forces have been battling ISIS forces. There's more to tell you about as we continue here tonight. There's some of the most popular vehicles on the road, but a new report raising some questions about a key safety feature we all depend on. Also, a girl on a mission personally thanking the police for their work in all 50 states and inspiring America in the process. We're back now with an important warning about some of the most popular SUVs on the road. New research from the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety finds that of more than three dozen new SUVs they tested, the vast majority had headlights considered marginal or poor, failing to give drivers a clear view of the road or blinding other drivers. NBC's Tom Costello has details.
Across the country, of the 40,000 people who die every year on the nation's roads, half are killed at night, dusk, or dawn.
The track is ready. You can begin your run.
Now, the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety is shining a light on a big part of the problem, the headlights. Of the 37 mid-sized 2017 SUV models it recently tested, only two had headlights that earned a good rating, the Volvo XC60 and Hyundai Santa Fe.
Too many headlights compromise safety because they only allow a short view down the road at night.
The split screen shows the difference using low beam lights. On the top, the Volvo XC60 with a good rating. On the bottom, the Kia Sorento with a poor rating. Side by side at 100 feet, the Volvo offers twice the light, illuminating a pedestrian and a deer barely visible with the Kia. Kia, one of 11 models with a poor rating, tells NBC News its vehicles meet or exceed national safety standards, and Kia will carefully evaluate the results of this test as part of its commitment to continuous improvement. Even some luxury SUVs received poor ratings.
If you don't have the right lighting or headlights, you might come around a corner and simply not see a child, a deer, or some other obstruction in the roadway.
Where the lights are aimed is critical, since higher-sitting SUVs can blind oncoming traffic. The auto industry wants government approval for adaptive headlights that reduce glare but maintain constant light on the road.
Starting next year, if automakers want their cars to get the very top insurance safety rating, they'll have to ensure their headlights are up to the job. Tom Costello, NBC News, Washington.
We're back in a moment with a final answer on whether Oprah will make a run for the White House. If you were hoping for an Oprah face-off with Donald Trump in 2020, you can file that thought away. The famed talk show host was asked on the Hollywood Reporter's Awards Chatter podcast if she thinks she'd have a chance at defeating President Trump. And she said she didn't know, but, quote, "I'll never have to know the answer to that because I will never run for public office." That should put any rumors to the rest. And that takes us to a very different kind of campaign by a young girl who plans to travel around the country this summer with a single purpose in mind, to give her personal thanks to those who protect and serve us. It all came about after an especially tragic day for the police last year. NBC's Kevin Tibbles tonight on how she is inspiring America.
Meet a little girl on a big mission.
This is sweet.
7-year-old Roslyn Baldwin has traveled all the way to the Windy City from Hammond, Louisiana.
Cute.
Thank you.
You look just like me.
To share her affection.
What do you think of the cops in Chicago?
Awesome.
She's made it her goal to crisscross the country, hugging as many men and women in blue as she can find.
Do you think police officers need hugs from time to time?
Yes.
How come?
They love us. They protect us.
And so what do you want to show them back?
Love.
Roslyn is the daughter of a minister.
Where did you get the idea to do that?
From God.
After five officers were killed in an ambush in Dallas last year, she told her parents she wanted to do something. She's already delivered her personal thank you to cops in 16 states, from Louisiana to Florida, Oklahoma, and beyond. Her ultimate goal is to hit all 50.
She says she's a little girl and she has a big heart, and so I didn't want to devalue her mission of love.
Officer Mike Carroll not only got a hug, he got to babysit Rosalind's little brother.
Thousands of miles from home to give a hug to a cop. I mean, it truly means a lot.
There you are.
I'm glad that she has our backs, and it's amazing for her to be as young as she is coming to our city and going to other cities as well.
See the lights? Got lights too.
A second grader walking the beat, so those who serve and protect can feel the love. Kevin Tibbles, NBC News, Chicago.
And when we come back, a wedding proposal of the best kind that you won't want to miss. Finally, tonight it's wedding season, of course, and there is one wedding we just had to share with you. It took place in Jamaica, and when it was time for the bride, Jess Nkrekko, to toss her bouquet, she did something else. She gave it to her best friend, Jessica Keeley, then asked her to turn around. And there on one knee was Keeley's boyfriend, Adam Brake, with a ring in hand. The bride called it one of the most special moments of her life, aside from her own just-completed wedding. She had love, she said, and she wanted people close to her to have it, too. Go ahead and reach for a tissue. I won't tell. We appreciate you spending part of your evening with us. That is Nightly News for this Tuesday night. I'm Lester Holt. For all of us at NBC News, thanks for watching, and good night.